Let's move on to item 12. Item I know we've all been waiting for. This is our educational presentation on the Ralph M. Brown Open Meeting Laws. I'm going to turn that over to Karen. When you are ready, the floor is yours.
Thank you. I am ready. And we have in the agenda packet a copy of PowerPoint slides. So we'll go through those. And feel free to stop me and ask questions. We try to do this training once a year. The Brown Act governs the rules of open meetings that the Sarah board is subject to. So we want to make sure that everyone gets reminders and has an opportunity to sit back and think about it and make sure that we're in compliance with these rules. So as you know, the Brown Act governs open meetings laws for local legislative bodies in California. There's a different set of laws that apply to state agencies. The CICERA Board of Retirement is a local board, and so we must follow the Brown Act. And the key concepts behind the rules in the Brown Act are that the retirement board meetings must be open and accessible to the public, and a board meeting agenda must be posted publicly. And during board meetings, the public must be given an opportunity to comment. So the concepts are open meetings, open to the public, and the public has to have prior notice, advance notice of the meeting and what's going to be discussed. The Brown Act defines a meeting to mean any congregation of a majority of the retirement board. In our case, it would be five out of the nine voting members at the same place and location, including teleconference locations, to hear, discuss, deliberate, or take action on any item within the retirement board's subject matter jurisdiction. And if that takes place, that meeting then must be open and accessible to the public. The Brown Act does have a section in it regarding serial meetings, and it prohibits those. And so in the event that there's a serial communication or serial meeting that involves a quorum of the board, that is not allowed. The reason for that is that those deliberations, those discussions, communications should be done in this forum, open to the public, with advance notice to the public and an opportunity for them to attend and make public comment. So let's talk about email for a little bit, because that can present some pitfalls that we need to watch out for. The typical example of a serial meeting that is done via email that is prohibited is if you have, it's actually the last bullet point on this slide, if you have an email chain involving contact from trustee A to trustee B, and then later, trustee B communicates that to trustee C, and then C communicates that with D and E. Now you have five board members through a serial communication via email discussing an issue that is relevant to CICERA and the board, and that is not allowed. So that's a major pitfall to be aware of and try to avoid. We should not be emailing all trustees, if we do email trustees, we usually blind copy all trustees to help you avoid accidentally hitting reply all. another example would be in response to an update from staff about a retirement board issue, a trustee responds again to all trustees. Don't do that. That is not allowed under the Brown Act. Another example is email polling of the board. That's also not allowed. It is basically a communication among the board in an email, and that should happen here openly. So let's talk about committee meetings. This board has one standing committee. It's the Audit Committee, and it's subject to the same exact rules So their meetings have to be agendized and open to the public. To the extent there are occasionally ad hoc committees that are established by the board, those, to the extent that they're there for a limited purpose and a limited duration, they can enjoy the exception from the Brown Act, and they do not need to be held in public. When it comes to attendance at conferences, the Brown Act does allow the trustees to attend. If the conference is open to the public, then you could have a quorum of, or more of the board attending, but the board members have to be careful not to have conversations, communications among themselves about CSERA business. That would be a violation of the Brown Act. But certainly they can attend the conference, and if it's open to the public, then more than a quorum could attend. If it's not open to the public, then we make sure not to send more than four trustees so that there's no Brown Act violation there. Examples are the SACRS, State Association of County Retirement Systems Conference. They have two conferences a year, and those are open to the public. So that's an example of a conference that the board, you know, the entire board could attend potentially without violating the Brown Act. Social events such as weddings, funerals, the attendance is allowed as well, and the majority of the board could attend, but again, trustees should not be discussing among themselves business that's within the subject matter jurisdiction of the board. There is now a section in the Brown Act that addresses social media, because social media is here and it's here to stay. Participation in social media by trustees is allowed, but a majority of the board members should not discuss among themselves business of specific nature that is relevant to CSERA on that platform. And there's an explicit provision in the Brown Act that says that trustees may not respond directly to other trustees on social media posts regarding CSERA business. So if you do participate, watch out for that. Any questions so far? Okay. You already know all of this. So the agenda requirement is, again, advance notice to the public of the meeting, where, when, and what's going to be discussed. The Brown Act says it has to be published, posted at least 72 hours before the regular meeting. The agenda has to contain a general description of each item of business to be transacted or discussed, and it has to specify the time and location of the meeting. It has to be posted on the CSER internet website. It has to be posted physically in the building in a way that even when the building is closed, say on the weekend, the members of the public can see the agenda. So we have it posted in a place behind glass that is visible from the street. So, of course, the reason for the agenda is to make sure that the public knows what topics are going to be discussed or acted upon. So if there's an item that someone wishes to discuss but it's not on the agenda, that then generally the board is not allowed to discuss that item, but there are some exceptions. The board or staff can ask a question for clarification, can make a brief announcement, or make a brief report. For example, the trustees will make brief reports about their attendance at CSERA's expense of various conferences or educational events. And when trustees make that report, it's a brief report that is allowed, and it's not necessarily specifically on the agenda. It's just generally under trustee comments on the agenda. Other exceptions are the board may provide a reference to staff or other resources for factual information. So you can make a request. I would like to know more about a particular topic. It's not on the agenda, but you can make that specific request. You can request staff to report back to the board at a subsequent meeting concerning any matter, or you can take action to direct staff to place a matter of business on a future agenda. So there are, there is also an exception that allows the board to discuss an item that's not on the agenda if it's urgent and it's really necessary to discuss this item, and it came up after the posting of the agenda. The Brown Act says that there's a requirement of a two-thirds vote of the board that there's need to take immediate action, and that the need for the action came to the attention of CICERA subsequent to the agenda being posted. If there's a two-thirds vote making those determinations, then the item can be taken up by the board, even though it is not listed on the agenda. In our experience here, that's happened very, very rarely, but there is a way to do that if the circumstances justify it. There is a requirement of a roll call, and we must publicly report any action that the board takes with specifically the vote or abstention of each member present for the action.
It's my favorite section of the Brown Act, by the way.
Yes. So let's go to public comment. We talked about one of the key concepts of the Brown Act is to ensure that the public can know about the meeting, attend, and participate. And the way they participate is by making public comment. So in each meeting, the board has to allow the public to make comment. The Brown Act says that reasonable limitations can be placed on this comment and public comment. In CICERA's case, the board decided to limit public comment to 3 minutes per speaker, and that is definitely a reasonable limit for public comment. The Brown Act also addresses situations where attendees might be disruptive and allows the board to deal with a disruption, to ask them to stop or have them removed from the room. We have not had that happen, to my knowledge, but there are rules governing that and the ability to exclude the disruptors from the room. Okay, now let's move on to closed session. Up until now, we talked about the openness of the meetings under the law, but the Brown Act also allows for closed session where the public is not allowed to observe and participate, but only in specific situations that are enumerated in the Brown Act. So, for example, for public pension systems like this one, the Brown Act does allow a closed session on the purchase or sale of a particular specific pension fund investment. And then other examples of closed sessions are personnel matters, and that includes the determination on disability applications. The board may confer with legal counsel in closed session regarding pending litigation, exposure to litigation against CICERA or the board, and to decide whether to initiate litigation. All of that can be done in closed session as part of a conference with legal counsel. Additionally, the board may confer with CICERA's designated representatives regarding employee salaries and benefits. But the thing to keep in mind is that there's a prohibition against taking final action in closed session. That final action needs to be done in open session. So, for example, today's consideration and approval of the MOU must be done in open session and was done in open session. Public employee performance evaluations as well can be done in closed session. There is a requirement of a public report depending on the closed session subject matter and what was decided. An example of that is reporting out on disability determinations. There's certain closed sessions, such as a conference with legal counsel on litigation, that don't require necessarily a report out. In the event the board utilizes the option to meet in closed session to discuss the sale or purchase of a particular investment asset, then there are special rules about the report out on that. It doesn't happen immediately. Either the transaction has to close at some point, and then that triggers the requirement to report out, or upon the conclusion of the transfer of the asset, then the report out is required.
Karen, on this particular item, our practice has been, for the most part, to not undertake investment decisions and transactions in closed session, but we've done it in a very public and transparent way. I can think of one asset where it was a real estate asset, our former building, that we did discuss once in closed session during the pendency of the sale process. But beyond that, I think we haven't, you know, unless it was a manager termination or something, we haven't done that in closed session, I think.
Yeah, that's correct. Okay. We do have the option to do that in closed session.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, so the closed session discussions are confidential. Board members may not disclose that confidential information that they acquire by being present in the closed session to any person not entitled to receive the information. And now let's turn to teleconferencing, because we talked about board meetings and everyone being present, but the Brown Act does allow trustees to attend remotely via teleconference. There are special rules about that. The location that you're calling from has to be open to the public. You have to post an agenda there. Or Cicero has to post an agenda there. If public members of the public attend and wish to make public comment from that remote location, we need to allow them the opportunity to do that. There has to be a quorum of at least 5 trustees participating from Contra Costa County. And the agenda itself has to identify each teleconference location on it. Any question about teleconferencing? We have utilized that on occasion.
Jurisdiction.
Yeah, that's correct.
Thanks.
What happens with the emergency exception to the Brown Act that came in post-COVID, where if a member woke up feeling ill, would they have the ability to use the emergency exception to call in? Because we do have that ability when we notice it. Could they use that to participate by calling in?
Not at the moment. That okay. is allowed in the law under the Brown Act. But it requires...
I think it requires... Does it require the meeting itself to be
broadcasted
via Zoom and correct. All of that? So we don't have that ability to have the emergency last-minute participation, just mm-hmm. the noticing and
exactly.
by telephone. And that's something... I mean, I realize we're talking about the Brown Act. I'm always in favor of more transparency than less. I mean, I really wouldn't mind if we did at some point reconsider... making our meetings available remotely for people to observe or participate in.
So it's been discussed in the past, and I think, and I'll just give it at a very high level. We looked at the costs and yeah. the changes to the physical structure that would be required to accommodate that. And I think on a cost benefit basis, that there was some concern about it.
Right.
Certainly, with our prior CEO, that discussion what was had, and I was involved in those. It would take some work in this room to make that work well from the standpoint of broadcasting. camera angles, AV upgrades, and so on. Sean's nodding with me, so I guess I'm on the right track.
And I recall we had that discussion, and just throwing it out there, but again, that's not what's on the agenda. It's just how we, whether or not there's any ability for the from the emergency provision of the Brown Act if someone wakes up sick, unable to participate.
Currently, we wouldn't be able to comply with the Brown Act requirements to allow that. And so lastly, we'll talk about consequences of violating the Brown Act. There's a criminal liability for individual board members. What we see mostly in published cases is civil remedies where the challenger would like to stop or prevent or invalidate the action of the board based on a Brown Act violation. The law does say that the agency has the complainer has to make a demand first and allow the agency the opportunity to cure the potential violation. But then if it does go to court and it's found that the agency violated the Brown Act or the trustees violated the Brown Act, then attorney's fees and costs may be awarded to the plaintiff. And are there any questions at this point?
Okay. Any other questions of Karen on this?
Well, that completes this hopefully educational presentation.
Yes, apparently I needed the remedial education, so I appreciate it. Anything further? No? Thank you, Karen.